This is Kay Ballard, and I would like to welcome you to Women Are Not Funny Radio. This is our second show of our new season, and we still don't have our musical introduction ready to go, but we will soon, and you are going to love it. And speaking of love, I love you too much. Whether you are a loyal listener or a random listener, I love you too much to hum it for you. If I did that, it would just be mean. So next week, you'll be hearing it. Our show today is about social media relationships. And our featured guest is one of our regular featured guests, Melissa Pierce, who is the it girl of social media video production. And the reason I call her the it girl is because I just love that expression, and also because she actually is. She's about to release her film, which has gotten a lot of attention in pre-release. It's called Life in Perpetual Beta, and she's going to be releasing it in March at South by Southwest, so that's very exciting. Hello, Melissa.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. As we were saying just before we began, I am excited about this conversation today because I just love to talk to you. And today I want to talk to Melissa about two things. The first, of course, is social media relationships. This is a very general topic, of course, but she has a very sad and interesting story to tell, kind of a cautionary story. And then I also, of course, want to talk about life in perpetual beta. Now, Melissa, there's nothing more boring, in my opinion, for listeners in any radio show and teleseminar than a conversation between the guest and the host about how they first met. I mean, to me, I think that's deadly boring. I always hate it, you know. But I'm going to violate my own rule and talk about how I met you because it's so directly related to women and humor. Listeners, Melissa Pierce is one funny woman. And I discovered her and found her on Twitter when I clicked on a link and saw a video she made about this whole idea of transparency and authenticity in social media.
Was that
and
when you
Melissa,
discovered me?
That is. Melissa, do you remember that video?
Oh, that video was, yep.
It was a groundbreaking video because I'm going to tell people how you ended it. She ended it in a very dramatic way, in a very bold way, in a very humorous way. She removed, what shall we call them, Melissa? Shall we call them accessories? She removed accessories from her bra and flung them at the camera. And I immediately knew that I was dealing with someone with a world-class sense of humor. It was, you know, that was just incredible. So I started following her on Twitter, and then shortly after that, there was the incident at the press conference where George Bush had to dodge a shoe. And Melissa came out with the funniest line of anyone. She said that the reason George Bush was able to be so nimble and do it is she was certain he had spent years dodging shoes from Laura. And so that's something Melissa, I still think about and laugh about. Melissa has two blogs, one personal blog, melissapierce.com, and another website, which is possibly sort of like a blog, for Life in Perpetual Beta. So it's lifeinperpetualbeta.com. And you are going to find links to both of those in her biography, which is posted on the left-hand column of the Women Are Not Funny Radio website. So Women Are Not Funny Radio, or womenarenotfunny.com, look for Melissa Pierce, and you will see links to her two blogs, and we'll post links on the replay as well. So this who we're talking to today is a woman who is very funny and very smart. And on that personal blog, one of her latest posts was about something she did to end the year 2009. She had an absolution ceremony, and she really went all out. She had a fire in her bathroom sink. So, Melissa, even though you thought you'd never get to say a word, now's the time. Tell us about that absolution ceremony.
Okay, well, absolution ceremony is something that I have been doing for several years now. I decided to not make resolutions. I heard somewhere that, 90% of people don't stick to their resolutions. And I just kind of thought they were dumb anyway. So I decided that instead of making a resolution that I wasn't going to do something or is I going to do something better, I would just start forgiving myself every year for the mistakes I made the year before. So this year I just wrote everything down that I would forgive myself for. And, did a little dance and a little ceremony and then set it in fire in my bathroom sink. Last year, I wrote everything down and packed it into a snowman and then, beat it with a bat until it was just nothing. It was obliterated, which was pretty fun. But it's just something that I do every year is I take the time to think about what I should forgive myself for. I just think if you make room, if you forgive yourself for your mistakes, if you let go of them, then you just make room for more good stuff. And all I want to do in any new year is just have more good stuff happen.
Well, it's just a fabulous concept. And on your blog, you listed some of the things that went into that fire for absolution. And they were, to me, they were either poignant or amusing. And one of the things that I certainly could relate to as a mother, although I was very rarely called into doing this, you forgave yourself for not wanting to play Legos.
I did. I always feel so guilty about not wanting to play Legos.
But not anymore, Ron.
No. Oh, no. I don't want to play Legos, and that's okay. It's not going to bother me.
It is great. I mean, probably people who see you walking around now can tell a difference, that now the Melissa Pierce that they encounter is someone who has forgiven herself for not wanting to play Legos. I bet they can tell. It's just my thought.
And they can tell. Yeah.
They can tell.
Another's a little bit straighter.
Exactly. Another thing that you forgave yourself for was you're not going to feel guilty for being happy that your two young children are in play school 12 hours a week.
That's right. I really felt like I was failing as Superwoman for a while because I sent my kids to preschool for 12 hours a week. And I just felt like, oh, if I had it all together, I could keep them at home and, and still live this full, wonderful life and still work and whatever else. And I'm always so happy when they're away. I'm happy when they're home, too. But,
I know.
It's so nice to be rid of them for 12 hours a week.
Yeah, and the thing that amazes me, and I'm glad, that you reached a point of comfort with it, but, you could certainly, couldn't you? Because I always did justify that as being a good mother, that you're sending them off to play school to socialize and actually, in the case of your poor, pathetic children, find someone who will play Legos with them,
Right, so I know, yeah.
But anyway, I was just taken by the whole idea of an absolution ceremony, and I wonder if it's too late. I mean, we are well into the first month of 2010, but for some of us who have a lot of guilt, maybe we ought to have an absolution ceremony, twice a day, one in the morning and one in the afternoon. What do you think?
I think that's a brilliant idea. And, here's where I say, who says when your new year begins?
Well, that is true. And don't we have the Lunar New Year coming up, actually? Or have I missed that?
That's
too?
Right.
I mean,
yeah, the Lunar New Year's, the Chinese New Year's coming up.
Right.
pick a day. Call it your new year.
Call it your new year. I'm still thinking more about the twice per day absolution ceremony. And
whatever you say.
Yeah. Well, I really probably should have more guilt. You know, that's probably what I should seek absolution for, is not feeling guilty enough. So before we start talking about your one particular experience and other experiences in social media relationships that have been a bit problematic, I thought it would be a good idea for both of us to acknowledge that we have had some, each of us, have had some wonderful experiences with social media relationships. Is that not true?
That is true. Absolutely.
I mean, so many that have worked. I know, you know, I'd love for you to speak a little bit about some of yours that have been so positive. I know, you know, for example, I know just from observation that one of your really good friends on Twitter is Liz Strauss, and that she's been very, very encouraging of you in your film. And so that would have to be a positive relationship. Who else? Any names you want to name? And, you know, this is where you name names, and it's a good thing.
This is where I'm a name dropper. Awesome. I got a list. Hold on. People blackmailed me into talking on your show about them.
Yeah, but why not? I mean, we have millions of listeners. You do know that.
Exactly. Yeah. So some people who've been very encouraging online, my husband retweets everything I say.
He's also, excuse me for interrupting, but he's also very good looking. You know, so he,
yes, he
so
is.
What you're telling me is he retweets and he's also very good looking. I mean, that's like a double whammy, right? I mean, that's amazing. Okay.
I am a lucky, lucky woman.
No doubt.
And then, you know, Jane Quigley has been very supportive of me. She's one of my dear friends now. Miha Baldwin just sent me a new computer. Well, it's an old computer, but for Life in Perpetual Beta, I have been editing this film for quite some time, and all of the Macs I've had have been 4 to 5 years old. So I've been through 3 or 4 of them now. So the last one that my friend Jason Fried gave me just died. And so Miha sent me the next one, and hopefully, you know, this 4-year-old computer holds out long enough for me to finish editing Life in Perpetual Beta. So they have been really good to me in loaning me or giving me their old computers so I could finish editing a film. But there have just been countless number of people who have supported me online. I don't even really know where to begin. I mean, they've paid for airfare. They give me places to stay. They've fed me. I went to South by Southwest, Kay, for 9 days with $40 in my pocket and no place to stay, and, you know, ended up being the rock star there that was just completely taken care of. I checked my luggage in at the Hilton every morning and just, you know, opened myself up to the opportunity that the day was going to be perfect, and I had the most wonderful experience there.
Oh, well, that is an amazing story. And if many people hear it, you know, no telling how many will flock there, you know, with $40 and give it a try. But I would caution them if they are not as charismatic as my friend Melissa Pierce, they may should give that, you know, second thoughts, because really I can understand why any number of people would want to befriend you. Have you, we're going to talk about this story that you blogged about right before Christmas, but what about business or other business relationships that you have established through your social media relationships? Have there been any or been many or any that you care to mention?
Oh, certainly. You know, I just joined forces with Leah Jones at Native Arts and Media. So she's a social media coach. She teaches people how to use Twitter who've never used it before. And I help implement whatever strategy they have. So we just joined forces together, and we actually met online. And she's here in Chicago. So we are working on projects together now. So that's a fabulous, you know, business meeting there. Because before, you know, I was just sitting at home editing film, not making any money and learning a lot about social media. And now I get to use the skills that I have learned or studied to put some money in my pocket and to help other people understand what's going on.
Oh, that's great. That is great. And, you know, from my own experience, which has been mostly very good, I am very, you know, enthusiastic about that sort of thing, business relationships that turn up based on social media relationships that you establish over a period of time, because you do get to know people quite well, I believe, most of the time, in a very mm-hmm. real way. And I've had any number of collaborative projects, including Women Are Not Funny. I mean, we're collaborating now. You are, you know, you've actually joined forces with me because you've agreed to be one of our regular featured guests, and that's a cool thing. But I can name any number of people that I've collaborated with. And yesterday, ironically, I had two conversations, one in the afternoon and one late at night, and with women who want to team up on projects. And then you're probably aware of my huge leap of faith, which is turning out so beautifully. I have a business partner in a very serious online business, and we met on Twitter. And so in the course, and we met just about a year ago. So in the course of a year, we have gone from just meeting on Twitter to a relationship that has grown and prospered. And now we're a Delaware corporation. So go figure.
Woohoo!
So that works out well. And of course, that's Kamala Spearley, and he is the co-executive producer of Women Are Not Funny. But I have had three bad experiences, which I could tell, but they really, in most ways, pale compared to the story that you told in your blog, which was a fascinating story on two counts. And this is the way I see it. The story itself was very interesting. And then how you told it, and the fact that you told it, and the fact that you told it in a very revealing way and referred to it as really revealing, it just made it very compelling. And for me to say I enjoyed reading it sounds a little bit cruel, Melissa, because I don't want to take any enjoyment or pleasure from your bad experience. On the other hand, it just was a fascinating read. And so I would like to tell listeners what it was called, and of course they can go and find it and read it, and I think they might find it interesting in the same way I did. She called her blog post, "I'm Screwed and I Did It to Myself." Wow.
Yeah. That's what I called it.
You just put it out there. And that, of course, was a very provocative title, but it is very clear to me from reading it. The reason you wrote that title wasn't to, you know, it wasn't to provoke interest. It was just almost, you know, I almost found it plaintive. And I would love for you to tell the story to the extent that you have, and of course, you're not going to be naming actual names or anything like that. But I think it's like I said, it's a cautionary tale, not only for people who might consider doing business online with people they've met online, but for any of us who are thinking about partnering up with someone. So
mm-hmm.
let me get you started. I'll get you started. You were a community manager for a website called Big Life. That's it. That's your start.
That's my
the
start.
Cue.
That's
yeah.
my cue. Okay. So, yes, I was a community manager for a website called Big Life. Basically, Big Life was a and still is, actually. It's under new management or new ownership, so this is good. It's a website where coaches, life coaches, and people who are looking for life coaching can meet up and get to know one another before they commit to work together. So it's a really
That's a brilliant idea, don't you think?
Well, I thought it was a brilliant idea, which is why I agreed to be the community manager. It's like, of course I'll foster this. This is wonderful. And in time, of course, I was given, I was told, and I have a few emails that gave me half ownership of this site from the gentleman who owned it. And we worked together every day and had a really good time, working together every day, you know, and I had only met him online and, you know, on Skype or talking on the phone, but that was it. So I started working
Let me stop you right here. Okay. When you say you had a good time working with him, what do you mean by that? Exactly.
Oh, he was just a lot of fun. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Super charismatic. A little bit far out. But he was very, very charismatic, and he was fun to be around.
And we're not going to say his name, I take it, but let me just ask you this. Did he have a name that could be, could he have a name that could have been a name of someone starring on a soap opera?
He had a name that a little girl would name her pet unicorn. which he admitted was not his real name, but his online name.
Oh, he did admit that. Okay. That's what I was curious about.
When you heard the name, did
bells go off when you heard the name? But of course they didn't, because you knew it was an online name. Okay.
Right.
Very good.
Right.
So you started working with him, and he gave you essentially half of the website, half interest in the website.
Sure. He gave me half interest in the website, so it was in my best interest to work my butt off to try to make this website fruitful, which, you know, I did work my butt off, but, you know, we weren't actually making any money because it was a startup, so of course not. But, you know, as you'll read in the blog post, in time, we worked on other projects together. You know, I got a nice sized check in the mail for something that we did, that we were doing together, and he just kind of flaked out and fell off of the face of the earth. And I was stuck having to tell our client that this guy just, you know, took his money and disappeared.
I want people to understand. One of the first projects you started working on was a film project, right?
Yes.
And, you know, I found that very interesting because the film project, as he conceptualized it perhaps, and you helped to do that, it was going to be a film project where you would do video, and it would feature coaches who were involved in the Big Life website, and it would give them visibility, and so it would be kind of like an advertisement film, sort of, advertorial film, where they were going to pay for being included and to give them visibility, help promote their businesses. And what you ran into was that coaches were kind of resistant to that idea, the whole idea of paying to be in a film. So that didn't really go anywhere, but you began, that's when you actually began your foray into video making, correct?
It sure is. We were going to make this video of all of these coaches and try to promote Big Life that way, and the idea just got bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, then I was like, we're going to make this film that's going to be completely interactive, and we're going to get all kinds of people from everywhere, and the interactive parts are going to be paid, and it became, you know, it's a problem I have of biggering ideas, these little tiny ideas, and I was just like, no, we're going to make this huge. It's a problem.
Is that a problem or is that a characteristic? You know, I mean, it can be a problem, but it does, you know, I think it's kind of cool, actually. And I have a lot riding on thinking that's cool, because I kind of do the same thing myself, Melissa. So please tell me it's okay to be that way. Biggering a project.
It's absolutely okay. It's absolutely okay. Is that good?
Yeah, thank you. You know, and I'll have my absolution ceremony as soon as we are finished with the call. But
okay.
Then, you know, you kind of made light of this. It was very interesting. The two of you decided you would team up in a very, once again, you know, all of these ideas are very cool and very forward thinking. You were going to team up as a coach and a consultant and call it the heart and the brains, and you were going to be the heart, he was going to be the brains. And you know, I find that somewhat amusing because I happen to know you are quite the brain yourself, a member of Mensa and all of that, but you were going to be the heart. And so you found a big client and you had an immediate success because you got a huge check, you know, a $10,000 client right off the bat. So that could have, that must have felt, you know, just absolutely terrific.
Sure, it was thrilling.
Great success just right out of the bat. But then almost immediately he started, that's really when things went bad, right? Almost immediately after that big success, he kind of just disappeared.
Yep, there were,
right?
There were problems. There were big problems with that. So we worked really hard. He kept on, do you hear that little girl?
Yeah.
Kept on,
I did.
Changing terms. My husband's home, so he'll take her. Kept on changing the terms, and, you know, just, it was like working with a 13-year-old kid. Oh, I've got a different idea. I've got a different idea. And taking responsibility for things and not following through with them. So
it sounds like a nightmare. So is this the point where you started seeing red flags, or did that occur earlier?
You know, I learned this about myself. I think, you know, I probably saw red flags when I first talked to him.
Really?
You know, that whole idea.
Could you describe what you saw that made a red flag appear? What the kind of thing? Can you do that?
Sure.
Was it his over enthusiasm, or
maybe it was his over enthusiasm. He was really good at bending stories that you knew. I mean, they always sounded brilliant. It was a great story, and even if you knew the story, he bent it to be a little bit more exciting. You know, he would show people how he was a three-time millionaire made over, but yet he was struggling for this tiny bit of money. You know, he didn't have assistants or people to help him, and you'd think if he had that much money, he would, you know? So some things didn't fit. But a lot of people overlook that because he was so charismatic. You know, it wasn't just me that this guy took their money and ran. Mm-hmm. I think there were a lot of red flags that just becomes, you know, you accept it. You accept that this person is like that and that's just okay. It becomes the normal thing. So it was an interesting thing for me to delve out what was thrilling and what was true, because everyone likes to, you know, hear something, you know, everyone likes to hear what they want to hear. And he was telling me what I wanted to hear, but it just wasn't what was actually happening.
Well, you had an idea that things were going wrong. But here's one more thing that really amazes me, is during this time, and it must have been a very unsettling time, Melissa, you know, it must have been just really pretty miserable, but you continued with your film. You continued filming, even though this was going on.
I did continue filming through all of this. So my company that I had just started was falling apart. You know, my partner had just up and left. He basically just walked away from it, said, I can't handle it, and just left me holding the bag. And the first company that I'd ever, you know, run, I didn't know how to run a business. I was just there to manage the project, you know, and talk to the client. And I had to come to them and say, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm so sorry. So all of that's happening. I have this film that I started making, and it was really, Kay, the only thing that was helping me keep it together is I was just going to singularly focus on this film. I was just going to let it happen. And I realized that the story in the film was different than the film that I was making. And that was really, really wonderful for me to realize that I was not making this promotional film for coaches. I was making a film that was going to make a difference. I kept on with the film, and I didn't talk about what was happening with anybody, not even my husband. You know, I just didn't talk about it. And I just, you know, I just continued with the film and put on that face of, you know, the happy face.
See, that
when I was filming, it was good.
That is the amazing thing, because for those of you, of us who were on the outside looking in, you know, no one would ever, ever dream of these very difficult challenges that you were facing emotionally about all of these things that had not gone well, you know.
Right.
And then as it happens, the men with the online name of a, you know, that would be a good name for a unicorn, actually faked his own suicide.
Yeah.
So you had the additional emotional hit of being very upset and sad about the suicide of someone who, you know, had been a great disappointment and caused you a lot of grief, but you certainly didn't want him to be dead. And, you know, you, to your credit in trying to contact his family, I suppose, to express your sorrow, found out that he wasn't dead at all. It was a fake suicide. So,
well,
clearly you...
And it wasn't even to express my sorrow. I have to tell you, I called his family to verify, because I called the police first to find out who had died in the hospitals, because, you know, you can do that. I was in San Francisco enjoying the sun, getting ready to film Biz Stone. I was going to interview Biz Stone for my film, which was one of the very last interviews that I did, getting ready to interview him. And I started getting all these calls from these life coaches that I used to work with on Big Life, who told me that this gentleman had committed suicide, and they called to ask me if it was true. So you can see, you already get the sense that nobody actually believed it. They all knew how this guy operated. So they were calling me to verify. I was their truth meter.
Mm.
And that's something that still bothers me to this day. They are life coaches. They are supposed to be in tune. And yet they were calling me for their, because I was the truth meter. Anyway, they're calling me. So, you know, I call the hospitals from where he's from, and nobody has any record. I call a couple days later because I should be able to get a death record or something, and there's no record of this guy, because at this point I knew his real name. You know, I had done enough research to know his real name. You know, after our company kind of fell through, I needed to find things out. So I look up his dad, whom I, you know, I happen to know that, you know, his dad used to do motocross. And so, you know, I just kind of put two and two together. I look up his dad and call him, and his dad spills the beans and, you know, tells me about an email that he sent, and tells me he just talked to him and blah, 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 and he's not dead and blah, blah, blah. So it was kind of infuriating, because he, you think, it's just a little infuriating, because here on Big Life, on the website, people are mourning. They are so upset. Their hearts are crushed because he committed suicide, and yet he was among all of these coaches. But then another personality comes online, Kay. Another personality comes online and says, I'm the executor of this person's will, of his estate, and let's make this a good thing. You know, and he even goes as far as to make it a legacy, to make this gentleman, who is the same guy that pretended to kill himself, personality number two, and personality number three comes along and says, personality number two is a legacy. Let's make it a whole coaching method. Yes.
Oh, well, that's outrageous. As someone who prides herself in being outrageous, it just makes me think I'm in the, you know, minor leagues.
You are totally in the minor leagues. This guy has, he's got chops. Meanwhile,
yeah, no doubt.
I'm in debt to all of our old clients, thousands of dollars. Yeah.
Yes. And you did talk about that on your blog, and you also said that you feel like your reputation has been sullied. And
sure.
You know, I know that must be a horrible feeling. At the same time, I can tell you, and you know this as well, you also have an excellent reputation with, you know, literally hundreds of people who know you online and who are crazy about you. And one of the reasons that we are is that you do have the ability to be so forthright about this. And, you know, there are two things I don't think Women Are Not Funny has to have a teaching moment ever. You know, I mean, really, this ought to be a place where we can come and be stupid. But just, you know, let's take a chance. Let's step out, do a little teaching moment, see how it plays. Is there anything, you know, what, obviously you learned a lot from this experience, but is there any one particular thing you would pass along in terms of how someone might evaluate the person that they are considering doing business with or hooking up with online for a business project or a joint venture?
Get it on paper, not just, you know, send someone a PayPal, that kind of thing. But one, get it on paper. Get a contract, not an email contract, but a signed contract. If it feels too good to be true, it probably is.
Yeah, I just wonder, you know, there probably could be, I think in my own case, one of the things that I'm looking for, I mean, there's no end to people who are very creative and very smart and high achievers, seemingly, that you can meet online, particularly on Twitter. And that's, you know, that's my major online experience. And I really don't have much incentive to go elsewhere because I love Twitter so much. But, maybe it's a situation where you need to start small. Do you think? Is that a possibility? Start small on a small project before you hook up with something for something really big and major. Don't know.
Well, starting, you know, okay, I started small. I was just being a community manager. That's not big change. I don't want to admit fault here. My lawyer says, Melissa, don't admit fault in anything. But had I paid attention to more cues, I would have known that it was not the right direction to go in. You know, I think a lot of people who get conned probably feel that way. But, you know, it should have been, it was, I suppose, a really big wake-up call when I realized that I didn't even want to tell my husband about it because I was just so ashamed that I had not noticed this. And he had said to me, I don't like this guy. I don't trust this guy. You know, and my friends had said that to me. And my husband had said that to me. So you know, it's not even start small. I'm all about getting the contract, and I'd love it to not be that way, because before then I was all about getting the handshake, but it's just not going to happen anymore.
Well, I mean, I think there's something to that. I think also one of the things that you've said, and, you know, we always want to believe things. We want to. And that's why when a Mercedes sales manager tells you that you can drive the car for 600,000 miles, you know, you want to believe that. You really want to believe that. So it's easy to believe. And
when Cole told me how big his penis was, I was totally like, yes!
But,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Those are the types of things that we want to just take at face value, because we, you know, we like to hear them. And by the same token, if someone told you, you know, something like that pecan pie won't taste good, you wouldn't want to believe that. So you wouldn't believe that, right? But if they told you it was delicious, you'd want to believe that, and you'd have a piece. So, you know, I think we're all just kind of wired that way. And when this guy came along and he told you about all kinds of exciting things, you see, one of the things I think about the people I've met on Twitter, I was telling my mother earlier this week, I said, it's just an amazing group of cool people and high-achieving people. And even the people on Twitter who aren't cool, they have very cool ways of talking about the fact that they're not cool. You know? So it's just all very seductive. And there are a lot of people with charisma on Twitter, so, you know, and online. And so if you met someone who had a lot of charisma, that in and of itself wouldn't turn you off, right? And, you know, and a husband not liking him. I mean, husbands don't like anybody, right? So, so anyway, I think, you know, I hope, and I didn't see it on the list of absolution, but it kind of was in certain ways. But I hope if it didn't make your absolution ceremony, I hope it truly will make your Lunar New Year absolution ceremony.
Good
I really hope you. It does.
I think we're good.
Well, that's great. Well, let's talk about Life in Perpetual Beta. So it's going to be debuted at South by Southwest. Tell us about that and what's going to happen.
Well, not officially
maybe not?
Debuted. Not officially debuted. You know, I because my computers kept breaking, you know, it's like the legacy of Life in Perpetual Beta is to have old broken computers. I didn't finish editing the film in time to submit it to South by Southwest. However, it will be done to show it privately at a private screening during South by Southwest. So we're doing a private
Melissa,
screening at South by Southwest.
Melissa,
what?
That is much sexier. That's much sexier.
Isn't it?
Don't you think?
Isn't that sexy? Yeah, so
we're
going to have a sexy private screening. And then I am talking with a couple tech companies that are going to do premiering of it online afterwards. And then we'll see if it goes to the big screen or if it just is a show that people get to see online. But big things are happening, and that's very exciting.
Well, it is, and it's fabulous in every way. And I just want to explain to anyone listening, and they can certainly go to lifeinperpetualbeta.com, the website for the video, for the film. It is a documentary about the way technology changes the way we think about things. And see, to me, Melissa, that is so brilliant in and of itself, because we're always hearing, you know, it's not unusual to have articles or films or discussions about the way technology changes things, but about the way technology changes the way we think about things, that is something truly unique and interesting to me. And it's also about, you know, one of the things that that you kind of posit, and I know I'll get this wrong and you'll help me get it right, but that it is okay, in fact, maybe a good thing, given the way things change so fast anymore, to have a life that's a little less planned than would have been appropriate in some other age.
Yes. Yes, and very much now. Sorry, very much now that technology plays such a big role in our lives, we don't have to. We don't have to plan a map to get to somewhere. We just look on Google Maps. We don't have to plan exactly where and when we meet someone. We just can text one another when we get there. All of these things change, and I think it changes on how we think about what we're doing in a much larger scale. All of these tiny changes that affect how we make decisions daily, in a much larger scale, we're changing those. People don't plan to have a job for 10 years because they know that technology is going to make that job 100% different in 2 years. It's really interesting what's happening now.
Well, yeah, it really is. And as someone who is an entrepreneur, our company is working on, we're developing software that we need to bring to market very quickly. And that's one of the, that's an interesting thing, is that things can change so quickly that even though we know we have a very cool product with a lot of very promising abilities and applications, we also know things could change very rapidly that can make it less viable. So, it's a very exciting time, but it's also very, very scary. Now, I know the story, but I want others to hear about, obviously you got started on this film while you were still working for, not for, but with this partner who was something of a scoundrel. But the film changed as you went along. But prior to that, you'd never really been a filmmaker. And so, I think people would enjoy hearing just kind of how this happened, how you invented yourself as a filmmaker.
Sure. I picked up a camera. That pretty much solidified it for me, really. I went to interview Dan Pink, and I was just, I was just going to a talk he was giving, and I brought my camera because I knew he was going to say something interesting, and I wanted to remember it. And I interviewed him and realized at that point that the camera gave me a kind of power I didn't have before, that I could ask someone smarter than me questions and get answers. So I just started interviewing people, and so became a filmmaker just because that camera gave me power to ask questions and get answers.
Well, it really did. But I know you to be someone with a lot of personal power, too. And it's pretty impressive that your first interview, your first one out of the box, was with someone like Dan Pink, who, of course, is quite well known for his writing and his his position as a thought leader in this space. I will admit to holding it a bit against him that he used my favorite joke. I thought it was an original joke, lawyer joke, in his TED Talk most recently. And after I heard that, I just thought, well, that's the end of it for me, because if I ever use that joke again, people will just think, oh, yeah, she's using Dan Pink's joke. So, can you blame me for being a little resentful for that?
Just go right ahead and be resentful. He always takes your best material.
Exactly. That's the way I should say it, isn't it? But I'm curious, since I know you and relate to you so much as a woman who uses humor, did you use humor at all in pitching your interviews when you tried to get these guys to let you interview them? Was that an aspect of it at all?
It sure was. I think, especially in the beginning, because I didn't know what I was going to say to these guys, I told them that I would be honored, that in fact, if they said yes, I'd probably pee my pants.
that was good motivation for them? That's
kind
of nice.
It worked.
Well, did you, when you were interviewing these people, did you try to help them? Were you interested in exposing their humor, in identifying whether they had any, had a sense of humor? Did you help them be funny in any way?
No, absolutely not. I was the star of the show. There was just no way they were allowed to be funny. I just tried to get them to be comfortable so that we could have a, as frank and candid a conversation as possible in front of a camera.
Well, you know what? That begs the question, though. Do you think humor is, you know, because one of the things that I'm hoping to do as we have these weekly conversations on Women Are Not Funny is really to identify some of the ways that women use humor, both in their careers and in their personal lives. And I'm just curious, you know, you fessed up that you used humor to pitch your interviews. You wanted to just make them comfortable in front of the camera. But do you think humor is a good way to do that? Were you funny with them in order to try to help them be comfortable, even if you weren't trying to help them be funny?
Oh, certainly. Certainly. I was funny with them so they could be comfortable. Kay, I'm going to have to go.
Really?
She won't. Listen, do you hear that little girl? Do you think I'm
hear that little girl? So, well, you know what? That little girl does not think that this is funny.
No, not at all. Not at all.
So,
not at all. It's been 40 minutes nonstop.
Yeah. Well, Melissa, we're almost at the end of the hour, so I really want to thank you for being here and just tell you that you are fired. And, you know, and anyway, thank you for being here. I'm going to blather on for a moment, and I think this is kind of a dramatic ending to this piece.
It sure is.
Okay.
Sure.
Thanks,
people
Melissa.
Are going to want more. Thank you.
People are going to want more. Yeah. We'll talk again soon. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye, Kay.
So, you know what? This is really a first. You know, I hope to make this into very controversial, and maybe I could start weeping. I could talk about how my featured guest just walked off the show, and or I could blame one of my many personality disorders on this. You know, I could say, I could do it retroactively, say, yeah, I'm that way. But the reason I am is once I was doing an interview with Melissa Pierce and she just walked off the set, so to speak, a few minutes early. But another thing that I could do, I have more questions that I was going to ask her, and I could ask the questions and then I can answer them in absentia and purposely give answers that she might not care for. And that would be kind of a payback. So, you know, I'm trying to decide what to do. One of the things that I wanted to mention, and I already mentioned it earlier in the interview, is that Melissa is a member of Mensa. And last week, our guest, our first guest with me as host, was Paula Kelly. Paula Kelly is a member of Mensa. And I think if I don't cut it out, you know, in fact, I need to text my next week's guest and find out if she's a member of Mensa, because at some point I'm just going to develop a complex to have as my guests women who are, you know, certifiably more intelligent than I am. And I don't look forward to that at all. But I will give you a couple of things about what's coming up and things that I'm excited about. Next week begins, it's January 29th, which of course is not February, but it is the beginning of what we are calling Divorce Week, or Divorce Month, rather, on Women Are Not Funny Radio. And our guest is going to be a good friend of mine, Heidi Neybert. She is actually half of a team, a married couple, that has Divorced Dads Weekly podcast, and they are Canadian. They have a huge online business and an offline business as well, consulting with men, mainly dads, and helping them get through divorce, get through custody matters. They are not lawyers, but they provide support services, they provide referrals, recommendations, and they probably know more about the whole field of divorce and custody, particularly as it pertains to father's rights, than most lawyers who are actually in that field. Heidi is a very good friend and a communications specialist and someone so much fun to talk to. So we are going to be talking about divorce, and I'm going to be giving her a hard time about the fact that she's taking the men's side when she's a woman. The other thing that I wanted to mention, and let me just tell you, we have a fabulous lineup in February of guests for Divorce Month. We have a best-selling author. We have someone who has a midlife divorce recovery program. We have Michelle Woodward, who is one of our featured guests, and I can't wait for the conversation with her. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. If divorce can be fun, and I do know something about divorce on a personal level, and since I am a person who enjoys talking about myself, you can be guaranteed that I will, because one of the reasons that we are having Divorce Month on Women Are Not Funny Radio is that sometime during the month of February, I hope for Valentine's Day, we will be releasing my comedy CD, KK's Divorce. And it's a sad tale, the sad tale that only I can tell. And there's a second kind of tragic backstory to the sad tale called The Making of KK's Divorce, where I really explain what it's like to make a comedy CD that's really not very funny. So you can look forward to Divorce Month on Women Are Not Funny Radio. We'll see what happens. The other thing that I wanted to mention, and this is exciting, Women Are Not Funny has its first sponsor, and that is KindlePimp.com. So you can go to KindlePimp.com, and it's just amazing. You'll be amazed how this entity, KindlePimp.com, found Women Are Not Funny and decided to be our first sponsor. So I encourage you to go and support our sponsor. Kindle Pimp is a site devoted to persuading you to buy a Kindle, which, you know, I happen to say quite objectively, or perhaps unobjectively, since I am the Kindle Pimp, that Kindles are a wonderful way to consume books. So that is it. Anyone who has some sympathy for me, please send me a sympathy email. I am someone who had an actual guest, walk off my show. That puts me, you know, in the category of, if you call Dan Rather, the CBS newsman of a few years back, you know, had a similar experience. It is a very sad thing for me, and I hope I'm able to survive. Next week, when you tune in, first week of Divorce Month on Women Are Not Funny Radio, and we'll have a musical introduction and outro. So, goodbye.